Welcome to Destination Unlocked with me, Daniel Edward.
Just about ready to depart.
Please make sure your seatbelt is not fastened and do make yourself comfortable.
Destination Unlocked is the chatty travel podcast where each week a local expert unlocks their part of the world for you. Today we're unlocking Barcelona, not just the Gaudi headlines, but the real, everyday Barcelona that you only learn from someone who actually lives it. My guest is Anne-Marie Branigan, co-founder of Runabean Tours, one of the best walking tour companies in the city. She's got practical tips on when to visit Barcelona, navigating Sagrada Familia without the chaos, the best neighbourhoods to stay in, and a few Catalan traditions that I promise you've never heard of. If you're planning a Barcelona trip or it's somewhere on your wish list, this is one worth sticking around for. So, Anne-Marie, where are you unlocking for us today?
Today, I'm going to be unlocking Barcelona, home to Gaudi, Barca football team, and just a very cool vibe for living.
I understand the cool, but every time I've been there, it's been hot.
Yeah, well, you'd be going around July or August when it's incredibly humid. But the best months, I think, if you come to Barcelona, would be May, the beginning of June, and then late September, all of October, beautiful. I do think it's a really nice place to visit when the temperatures are a bit cooler.
And I imagine the crowds have gone as well.
Barcelona has quite a long tourist season, so it's pretty busy all the year round. It's quite unusual to suddenly just go online and see tickets available for the next day for Sagrada Familia, for example. I think before Christmas, a lot of people are trying to prep up for the Christmas season. So beginning of December, you don't have to fight the crowds. It's lovely. The atmosphere is very local as well. It's definitely a recommended time to come.
I think I need to take you up on that tip because I've only seen Barcelona in that peak tourist season. It's crowded, it's busy. There are definitely parts of the city that I haven't managed to get the true essence of because of the fact that I'm trying to see it with 1,000 other people wiggling their selfie sticks around. Barcelona is one of those cities I think everybody thinks they already know because there are some really famous parts of the city. Should we rattle off those ones and then get into the stuff that people don't know about but maybe should know about? You mentioned Sagrada Familia. Why don't we start there?
Well, Sagrada Familia, it's just a must do. You can't avoid it. It's amazing on the skyline. We're hoping to get the tower finished for 2026. I'm never sure whether to trust the architects because there's always delays. I know you read it in all the guidebooks and you see it on all the videos, but it's something when you see in real life is pretty spectacular. Then you've got the other Gaudi sites, Casa Batlló, which is a beautifully colourful house with lots of bone balconies. It's always busy, busy.
Is that where Gaudi lived or he just designed it?
He designed that. He lived up in Parkway for the last 19 years of his life. Parkway is a park on a hill. It was supposed to be a private housing estate for the very privileged, a garden community, a gated community. And the idea was that people would buy their own plot of land and build their own house. Gaudi bought the model home because nobody was buying there. Ultimately, it turned into a park. And he designed all of the infrastructure, the pathways, the reception. It's really stunning. Very unusual architecture as well. It's in his later period and he's really playful with it. You can visit his house in Parkway. Just don't go on a hot day.
Because there's no shade.
Go in the morning or the evening if you're going in summer. That's my recommendation. It's very exposed.
He has definitely put his stamp on the city. You can tell it is a Gaudi city.
Yeah, it is. When we get requests, it's always Gaudi that people are eager to see. The Gothic Quarter is famous as well. That's one of your lead attractions. But not so many people would know about it offhand, whereas Gaudi is global. People know the name of the architect. So the Gothic Quarter is beautiful to visit as well. The cathedral was the headquarters. All the rich and fabulous people wanted to live beside the cathedral. So it's beautiful Gothic architecture from the 14th, 15th, 16th, and then the mishmash as you build on top within walls, so the streets make no sense, but it's really picturesque. Beautiful plazas, lots of churches, beautiful old shops as well.
And you can really lose yourself in that.
Yeah, you can, geography-wise and mentally as well.
That quarter, the Gothic quarter, is off of La Rambla.
It is. When we refer to the old city, it's walls that went around the city in the 13th and 14th century. And La Rambla runs more or less through the centre. On one side, you've got El Raval. On the other side, you've got the Gothic Quarter. And then there's another parallel street, and that's where you've got La Ribera. That's where the working class people used to live in the olden days. That's the three neighbourhoods of the old city.
So it was a very distinct structure of the city. If you were this, you were living here. If you were that, you were living there.
Yeah, like nowadays.
How has it worked out nowadays? Because Barcelona has grown. It's really spread. If a
Yeah.
tourist is visiting, chances are they're staying in the centre. But that's not the whole of Barcelona now, is it?
Barcelona, transport-wise, is fantastic. So don't be scared to stay a little bit outside of the centre. When we talk about the centre, we do talk about the old city. But those walls got torn down in the 1850s, and we got a grid shape extension built, and that's called the Eixample. And the Eixample swallowed up small towns that used to surround Barcelona. These towns are nowadays neighborhoods. Each contained their own character. Gràcia, for example, which is probably one of those closest neighborhoods that got swallowed up, is a really cool neighborhood to stay in. Lots of beautiful plazas. It still has that feel of a village, but within a city, full of nice galleries, great takeaway eateries, hipster places. Gràcia would be a great neighborhood to stay in. If you want a cheaper accommodation that's still quite well communicated, I would head out 10, 15 minutes by metro. Costa France, Sands, they would be cheaper places to stay. You have to kind of get into the smaller areas that used to be a little centre of a village or a neighbourhood.
How does the metro work?
Very simple. If you're not colorblind, you're grand.
Great.
So it's very similar to London, but it runs on time and the trains don't break down.
Unheard of.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's all color coded. The lines are listed and it's very cheap as well. It's all one zone. The only zone that you have to pay for a little bit extra would be to go to the airport by metro.
That's just a tourist tax.
I suppose so. Funnily enough, if you catch a train, you don't pay any extra than in the metro. And with a metro ticket, when you buy your ticket, you can buy a family ticket where you get 8 journeys and you can share it between all of you. Or you can get a T10, a casual ticket, and that gives you 10 journeys, but only you can use it. It's very cost effective and you can change modes of transport. So you can go from metro to bus to tram, and they won't charge you any extra within the hour and 10 minutes. It's clean, it's efficient. You just have to watch out for a few pickpockets here and there in busy times.
I was going to ask you about pickpockets because Barcelona does have a bit of a reputation.
Yeah, like any big tourist city, you're going to have pickpockets. I do feel that it has gone down in the past few years on the metros and the trains, but you do have to be very aware. If you bring a bag with you, just don't have it open, don't have it towards the back, don't leave your mobile phone when you're eating in a terrace. We all get struck. The years that I've lived here, I've been pickpocketed 3 times, even though I feel I'm aware and quite savvy. So it's just something that you've got to look out for. But I do feel it's not as bad as it used to be. I see a big change since the pandemic.
Oh, there's a positive come out of coronavirus. Okay, well let's move away from the pickpockets. Let's talk a bit about food. I don't know if this was part of your naming of your company, Runner Bean Tours, but it gets me thinking of food rather than running. I think that probably says more about me. What would you say is the perfect Barcelona breakfast?
I suppose you've got to try out the patisserias, pastries and sweets. A nice pastry in a cafe con leche would be my ideal breakfast in Barcelona. Here in Catalonia or Barcelona, the ensaimadas are very popular. It's kind of a round pastry, very light, ideal for dipping. It takes the flavor of a coffee really nicely.
And is there a distinct feel of a Catalan culture rather than a Spanish culture more widely?
Definitely. Catalonia formed many years ago as a very different place. History has a lot to do with it. People had their own customs and laws and very influenced from the north as well. The south has got a lot of North African architecture and history to it. And I think that affects the food, it affects the language as well. Yeah, there's a very distinct Catalan culture.
What's one piece that really stands out as a Catalan dish rather than a Spanish dish you might pick up in Madrid? What's a dish for lunch or dinner that you've got to try in Barcelona?
Albondigas and sepia. Meatballs with squid is definitely Catalan. So you get your meatballs, but they cook it with cuttlefish. I think it's the giant squid. They cook it with that in the stew sauce. It's a very different flavor. So that's a very much a Catalan dish. It was one of the first dishes I tried when I arrived to Catalonia. It was recommended by all my Catalan fans. Albondigas and sepia is a good dish. And cannelloni is considered a Barcelona dish, but they do it very different from the Italians. You don't use a tomato sauce. You stew your meat and then you put it in a bechamel sauce. You could have pork, you could have beef, you could have duck. Bechamel sauce in the cannelloni. And then bechamel sauce and a cheese on top, and you put it into the oven. The oldest restaurant in Barcelona, Can Cuietes, it's had newspaper articles written about their cannelloni. So I definitely recommend going there if you're going to try them.
You mentioned that the meatballs with the squid was one of the first dishes that you tried when you moved to Barcelona. What brought you to Barcelona?
My husband, he's not Catalan, he's from the north, he's from the Basque Country. We had a lot of friends from Barcelona and we love the city, the culture. We've visited quite a few times, so we just decided to go for it, make the plunge.
And you set up Runner Bean Tours together as a family-run business.
We set it up together. I don't know if it's the best thing for your relationship to work with your partner full time, but we have different roles, so we kind of avoid each other at different points. We'd gotten work as tour guides. When you first arrive to a city, you try your hand at a lot of different things. I was English teaching as well. The company that we worked for part-time, tour guiding, kind of crumbled. And we thought, well, we really like this. Why don't we have a go and set up our own company? We just started really, really small and then grew bit by bit over time and created lots of different tours.
Is it fun to create the tour?
Yeah, we're curating. There's a lot of research, but it came naturally enough. We won free tours where it's donation based. The Gothic Quarter and the Gaudí main sites. They were wonderful to research. Gaudí a lot easier than the Gothic Quarter, which is 2,000 years of history. I studied ceramics in college, worked as an artist for many years, so I found the Gaudí very easy to do. And Gorka was the one who researched a lot about the Gothic Quarter. And then from there, we started to create paying tours. So the Kids and Family Tour, I'd worked specifically with kids when I came to Barcelona as an English teacher. So that was very natural as well. Lots of games, songs, visiting giants, candy. I know how kids' minds work. So that was a good tour. And then the night tour was set up by Gorka, who's into the macabre, into the torture and into the Spanish Inquisition and the hidden corners that you can get. As time went on, I qualified as an official guide. So now we offer transported private tours where families can pick what they want to do, what buildings they want to go inside, if they want to do day trips. There's lots of different things going on in the company.
What's your most popular tour?
Gaudí. I think that half the requests we get are for the Gaudí sites. He's world famous. And also, Sagrada Familia tickets sometimes can be a little bit to get. In the high season, you need to have your tickets bought about 6 weeks or 2 months beforehand just to be secure of your place in Sagrada Familia.
On your major tours, the public group ones, how early should people book for those?
The kids and family fills up quite quickly. If people book early, we know whether to put on a second guide or run a second tour. It's always better to book a bit earlier than a bit later.
The family tour, it's such a good idea because it gives the children a way of engaging with the place at a level which is appropriate to them. Because seeing old buildings can't be a child's favorite activity without a little bit of structure to help.
It's made for the children. I think if you're going to visit a city, you have to be interested in culture. There's lots of places along the coast that if people want sunshine and beach, you don't come to Barcelona for the beach. It's not an incredibly nice beach. So the people that will come to the city are interested in the culture. I have had people who come on day trips as well with the family, say they're staying down the coast in a different town, but they'll take the day into the city with the kids. And sometimes the adults told me that they learned an awful lot on the tour that they hadn't realised because it's done in an engaging manner and they can sit back and they can let somebody else take the responsibility for bringing the kids through the history of the city. It's not on their shoulders, so they can relax on tour as well.
If you're thinking of taking the kids to Barcelona, or you want to check out the full range of tours Anne-Marie and her husband Gorka offer, their website is www.runabeantours.com. www.runabeantours.com. Barcelona is one of my favourite big cities in Europe, and Anne-Marie has lots of insider tips still to come in this episode of the Destination Unlocked podcast. Just before we get back to Anne-Marie, now is a really good moment to check that you're subscribed to the Destination Unlocked podcast wherever you're currently listening to this episode. It'll make it so much easier for you to find us again the next time your mind's taking a little wander somewhere lovely. For now, let's head back to Barcelona with Anne-Marie from Runabeant Tours, and it's time for our quiz. Good luck. Which famous Barcelona church has been under construction for more than 140 years and counting?
Sagrada Familia.
Ding, ding, correct. Do you know the year it started?
1882. By Pilar, not by Gaudí. Bilal quit. He had a big argument with the ecclesiastical committee about materials in the crypt, and then Gaudí took over in 1883.
Wow. Gosh. One fight led to all of that.
No, it led to all of
That's
that.
Fantastic.
Well, Bilal's design was a lot smaller.
And it would have been finished.
8 years, nine at the most. Oh, it would have been finished, but not as spectacular.
No. I think you'll definitely get the next one. Very easy question for you. Which architect's colourful mosaics cover Park Güell and half the fridge magnets sold in the city?
Gaudi.
Correct. Which street is famous for its flower stalls, human statues and pickpockets all at the same time?
Las Ramblas.
Yes. Barcelona hosted the Summer Olympics in what year?
1992.
Correct.
That's what led to the beaches. We didn't have beaches before that. We got sand imported in.
That's the Olympic legacy in Barcelona.
There's a bit of debate about that, whether the city council should be paying for it or the Spanish government. So let's see if we keep that beaches. We have to keep topping them up. And it's an expensive business.
Yeah. I might get into the sand distribution market. I hadn't even thought about that. Final question. If a Catalan says Visca Barça, what are they cheering for?
No sé. Maybe. I get my son to do a lot of the translation, but what's it mean?
Apparently it means they're cheering for FC Barcelona.
I'm not a football fan either.
Well, given your bonus point for 1882... You got 5 out of 5.
Fantastic.
Even with that one at the end. If somebody doesn't speak Spanish or Catalan, how are they going to do in Barcelona? Is English widely spoken?
English is widely spoken. There's a big international community in Barcelona. I'm quite dyslexic, so I was advised to learn one language first and then the other. So I did pick Spanish to learn first.
Has that been okay for getting around then in Barcelona to rely on the Spanish first?
Yeah, what will happen quite often is that you might talk to somebody in Spanish and they'll reply in Catalan, but you know, you can kind of wriggle your way around the conversation, no problem. Now, that's in Barcelona. If you go outside Barcelona, it's a different story. People do make amends for that and they're very welcoming. But if you go outside, Catalan is more spoken. The education system here is in Catalan. The children will learn Spanish as a second language. That's in the state schools.
So a few Catalan phrases then. I think you'll be able to help us with this. It's not difficult ones. How do you say hello?
Bon dia.
Oh, bon dia. Okay. How do you say please?
Sish plow.
Oh, sish plow. Gosh, that's nothing like I would have guessed. Thank you.
Merci. They'll use French for thank you.
Again, I would never have guessed that one. Goodbye.
Adieu.
And another sangria, please.
Ultra mass.
Gosh, that's very different from Spanish.
It's a separate language. It is a separate language.
Yeah, my goodness. Well, I'm pleased I've learned a few words there. I'll give them a go. Let's get into some insider secrets. Once you've seen Sagrada Familia, you've been to Parc Güell, and maybe you've been to the football stadium if you're interested in the football. What's the local secret that you love to show your private visitors that they would never otherwise see?
There's a lot of hidden gems in the Gothic Quarter. Businesses, for example, that have been open for many years and still have the same beautiful decoration inside. They're very humble. Not a lot of people think to go, but you've got the oldest magician shop in the centre, Rey de la Magia. You've got the oldest business in Barcelona, a candle shop, and they've all got their original decoration. They're absolutely beautiful. So it's a little slice of history within a business. Another really nice thing to do is when you wander up Eixample is the golden quarter of Eixample. So Passage de Gracia and all the streets that would cross over in that zone. Wander along and go inside different doorways. Sometimes they're open. You can see the most beautiful Art Nouveau decoration just in the hallway with original old wooden lifts that will bring you up to the top. So it always surprises me. Lots of little hidden gems like that. Sometimes they have doormen and sometimes they don't.
You just let yourself in.
follow behind someone.
That's how you get your secrets. It's true. One thing that I found when I was wandering around the Gothic Quarter in that sort of maze of old streets that don't make any sense until you've left them and you realise you've just done a full circle without realising it, and you've got all these little shops. I found a shop. It's one of my first thoughts when it comes to Barcelona. And it's a farmer doing a poo. I don't know if I'm going to say it right. A cagina? A cagina?
Oh, cagine.
Cagine. What's the story?
The El Cagine goes on the nativity scene. It's a farmer doing a poo. It's an old countryside man doing a poo. He's got the red hat, the white shirt, the black trousers. And the idea is it was a symbol of good luck for the New Year harvest. What you take from the earth, you give back to the earth. But now on the big Bethlehem scenes, they'll put a few El Cagines, and he's always hidden when he's doing a poo. So he'll be behind a bush or a stable. And the big thing for the children is to try and find El Cagine. So it's a bit like Where's Wally, you know, you're kind of trying to find him there. It's the fun thing for them to do. Suddenly it took off with visitors. They found this custom very unusual. So now you'll find modern day versions of El Cagine, as in they'll do Trump, Madonna, famous politicians, and they'll all be their trousers down and they'll be having a poo. Did you see the little log while you were in the shop as well with a little red hat on? No, the logs are another pooing tradition that we have here in Catalonia, and it's basically a log and you paint on a face and a smiley mouth, and you've got the red berrettina hat And about 3 weeks before Christmas, a lot of Catalan families will go out to the forest looking for the log that the parents have obviously planted for their children. The children will find the log, bring it home, put it under the Christmas tree, feed it food every night. The log magically wakes up in the middle of the night and eats it. It was great when we had a dog because she would eat all the food. Now we've got to remember to empty the plate. And then on Christmas Eve, the children grab a stick and they start to hit the stick and sing a song telling the log to poop out their Christmas dessert, the turrón, and a couple of Christmas presents. Usually they sell them in the markets at Christmas time. Not a lot of tourists know about the logs, but they know about the El Caganay because it's kind of little enough to buy as a souvenir to bring home, but you're not going to buy a big log, and shove it into your suitcase. On my family tour, when parents learn about the log and they want to bring the tradition into the house, they'll usually make their own from home, so.
Oh, that sounds great. No, I'd never heard of the log one. I bought my sister and her husband Peppa Pig as a Kagané. And it's all pink.
It's all pink, all pink, bum and all.
Everything. It's such an unusual tradition, but it makes people smile.
It does. I couldn't believe it when I first arrived. And a lot of people, when they first hear about it, kind of go, really? But now I'm so used to it. It just seems old hat at this stage. We've got Groucho Marx in our household as El Caganay. My husband's a big fan of the Marx Brothers. We called our son Harpo after Harpo Marx. He can change his name when he's 18 if he wants.
Barcelona is the most amazing city break, but there's also the Catalonian countryside around it. There are beach resorts further down the road within an hour. If someone was coming to Barcelona and they were thinking, I want to get a little bit further afield, is there a town, is there a countryside special that's a day trip from Barcelona that you think this is one that you've got to go to?
Tarragona is one I would recommend. A lot of people would go up north to Girona, which is beautiful. It was where the Game of Thrones, so quite a few scenes were filmed there, so it's very beautiful and medieval. But Tarragona down south is Roman based. It was the capital of the Northern Iberian Peninsula when the Romans ruled, and it's got some wonderful museums and it's very pretty and it's not very touristy. Girona would be more touristy, but Tarragona isn't. So I'd recommend that. It's not countryside, it's another city, but it's not as big or bustly as Barcelona. And around Tarragona, all along the coast, you're going to have different holiday resorts. It's lovely, and you can do it all within a day. In any of the sites, they'll sell the ticket for the museums and the different archaeological sites, and it's one price to take in all the sites rather than paying individually. We eat very well in Tarragona, and it's a lot more relaxed, the atmosphere. I always love Tarragona, and it's not very long on the train. The train would be the way to get there. It can take you about 45 minutes, and you're not far from the centre.
Where's the station in Barcelona to get out of Barcelona then?
To get out of Barcelona, go to Sants Estació. They would bring you to not only Tarragona, but you can go, Madrid, Sevilla, Bilbao. That's the main hub, Sants Estació. It's very well laid out. Once you get there, all the signs are very clear. It's not difficult to navigate, so people shouldn't be nervous about it.
The wrap-up roundup quick fire finish is now ready for boarding.
All right, let's wrap up with our quick fire round for Barcelona. What would you say is the top thing to see or do?
Oh, Sagrada Familia. It's just a must. Have we mentioned that before?
We might have mentioned it.
Well, we might have mentioned it. Apart from that, Montjuïc is really nice. It's got a fort and cable cars going up to the top of the mountain that overlooks the port and the city. And you get really close-up views of the city from up high.
So that's for your panoramic photo. Some people love to get the panoramic photo of the city. You go up
Yeah.
there.
You go up there, and also there's a lovely walk around the fort. It's only 1 kilometer, so it's a really nice wander around. We always find activities. The fort's now open if you want to visit it as well. It just makes a really complete trip, so especially if you take the cable car from the funicular up to the top. The views are spectacular, and it's not that expensive for a cable car. It's about €20 return.
Top tourist trap to avoid.
Las Ramblas. Las Ramblas has got beautiful architecture, and I definitely recommend walking down and looking up. But if you look from side to side, it's been taken over by very bad restaurants, a lot of tourist shops. It's an overwhelming feeling, and unfortunately now people are trying to talk people into the restaurant. So there's a sense of hassling there, which is really not part of the culture. So I definitely would wander along, but I wouldn't hang around in Las Ramblas or eat in Las Ramblas.
Your favorite time of year to visit Barcelona?
December or February, they're really quiet periods to come and visit the city. You feel like you have it to yourself, and you get more of a local feeling as well.
And if you're coming December through February sort of time, what should you be wearing?
Never goes below zero here. You can get a chill factor with the wind. So bring a jacket and jumper, but some days in December, if you're catching the sun, you might even strip down to a t-shirt. It
Golly
depends. So
gosh.
I'd layer. I would layer. But that would only be at midday. And if you're suddenly in the sun.
If somebody wants to really get in the mood for a trip to Barcelona, is there a book you'd recommend?
I loved Shadow of the Wind, but it's stuck in a different period. I like the Baroque. It's really wonderful. It's really well written. The characters are wonderful. The main character, Daniel, goes with his father. It's all kind of post-Civil War, so it's early 1940s, and he visits the cemetery of forgotten books. And that alone evokes images. And on a trail to find the author, he talks about a lot of the sites of Barcelona, La Pedrera, the prison of Montjuïc, and all these characters that play out. I think it's a wonderful book to read before coming to Barcelona, yeah, for sure.
Top food or drink to try whilst you're here?
Top food, cannelonis. I really do like the bull's tail or the duck ones. And cava. Cava is a drink. We're a cava producing region. So we don't have champagne. We have cava here in Northern Catalonia. Cordenyo is the oldest cellar. They first started producing it. So it's a really nice place to visit if you want to make a day trip out of it as well.
Last time I was in Barcelona, I did a cava tasting.
Ah, how'd
I
you get
didn't
on?
know there were so many different types.
Did you try cava sangria? It's now a thing.
No.
Oh, it's really good. So instead of using red wine, they use cava. It's very refreshing. Any people I take for dinner to a restaurant, when they try it, they're like, whoa, it's really good. So next time you hear it, Daniel, okay?
Think I'd prefer it, yeah. Final question. What would be your top authentic souvenir to take home? Not a magnet from China. What's a real local souvenir to take home?
I would recommend maybe going to La Pedrera gift shop. It's a really nice gift shop. And some of the most beautiful things I've seen there, you can buy copies of handles that Gaudí designed for windows or for doors. Not too pricey considering, or cups that are made with handles of the design of Gaudí. So it's an interesting design shop. I would kind of nose around there. You get some really nice things like copies of the tiles that line Passage de Gràcia that Gaudí designed. So rather than one authentic piece, I would recommend the shop so that you can choose what you feel is to your taste.
Get as much as you can. I'm picking up the Gaudi theme running quite deep, but it makes total sense as a ceramicist coming through to Barcelona, how that could not speak to you. It would be impossible. Amory from Runner Bean Tours in Barcelona, thank you so much for unlocking Barcelona for us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on, Daniel.
Well, that's all for this episode of Destination Unlocked. A big thank you again to Anne-Marie Branigan from Runabean Tours for unlocking Barcelona with us today, from Gaudi's big hitters to the Catalan traditions you don't usually hear about. If this has helped you plan a future Barcelona trip or gave you a few nice ideas for your travel wish list, do hit follow or subscribe so you can easily find your way back for the next journey. And if you want extra tips, links and guides, you'll find everything waiting for you at destinationunlocked.com. I'm Daniel Edward, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.